started with this meeting. This is the Senate Committee on Community and Regional Affairs. Today we have Senator Thomas, Senator Wagner, Senator Kukish, and myself, Senator Olson. We've got two bills up today, and the first one is Senate Bill 304. It'll be presented by Dave Gray, and then we have Senate Bill 228, and presented by Senator Dice. Dave Gray, you want to go ahead and present Senate Bill 304?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dave Gray, a legislative aide to Senator Olson. This bill is Senate Bill 304 is a committee-sponsored bill. I'd like to draw your attention just to the back page of the bill. That shows you where the what is being done here. It's to provide without charge information to regional organizations formed under 4433-895 free of charge. These limited entry commission information. 4433-895 is the statute that establishes what's called ARDRs organization. They're Alaska Regional Development Organizations. They're nonprofit organizations comprised of representatives of the economic, political, and social interests in each region. Their purpose is to encourage and stimulate economic activity within the region. Of the 11 organizations, 8 of these organizations have substantial commercial fishing activities. SB 304 allows ARDRs to benefit free of charge for the information that is generated by the commission on what's happening in the commercial fisheries in these regions. In the sponsor statement, I'm sure most of you know that commercial fisheries is a multi-billion dollar impact on Alaska. It employs tens of thousands of people, both as fishermen as well as seafood processors, and it is a main economic engine in great parts of the state. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a pretty simple, straightforward bill. I'd open for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Gray by any members of the committee? Senator Kukish.
Could you tell me whether or not the Commercial Fisheries Energy Commission has a position?
Mr. Chairman, they're here to...
Actually, we have one person to go ahead and testify, Senator Kukish. Yes. Senator Wagner.
The only part of this bill I have any trouble with is the last two words in the bill, line 6, page 3, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. Why would the ARDR be able to access or even be interested in individual fishermen's earnings?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, they would not have access to confidential information. What they would have access to is trends, averages, you know, the value of the fisheries going up per earnings, that sort of thing. Confidential information of individual fisheries is not a part of this bill.
Senator Wagner, follow up.
Mr. Chairman, if I could extend, if you look at the after that AS 4433-895, it talks about public information, not confidential information or any other kind of information. It's the information that's, well, not confidential.
Senator Wagner.
Well, I guess I have a problem with the wording. Then it says, "And limited entry permit holders, harvests and earnings." So does that mean collectively or individually? I guess if we put the word collectively in there someplace, and I think I understand where they're trying to get to. In other words, you're trying to say in Cook Inlet during 1987, the commercial harvest by a gear type on sockeye salmon was thus and so, right?
That's
correct. Is that correct? Not individual fishermen's production, nor income from that production.
Mr. Chairman, I think that that's my understanding of the intent of this bill. It's not to reveal anybody's or any individual's personal gain or anything like that, but to have, and my understanding, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission does that, where they do a composite analysis of, well, this was the value of the fishery, you know, in this particular thing, the price was doing this, and you know, the harvest value was this, and you know, when you mesh that up with maybe ex vessel added value activities in the region, that sort of thing. Not to really reveal any personal information.
Yeah.
But Mr. Chairman, though, I think that the Limited Entry Commission can speak more definitively of how they handle their information and who they give it out to and why.
Now the question, Senator.
I'll wait until Mr. Holman gets up here, because I've got another question to ask, and I think it'll clarify this, because I'm still not sure of the wording, because.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor? If not, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Gray. We'll have Frank Holman from the Commission on from the Entry Commission.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Holman. I'm one of the commissioners at the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and better known as the Limited Entry Commission. And I guess I would start by saying that normally we would be reluctant to be creating more work for ourselves without charging a fee. But I think in this case, because there's only a few arters and the bill is limited to arters only, we don't anticipate a big rush of coming in needing all this information. We did put a zero fiscal note on it because the revenue impact would not be great from this. It's a matter of spending a few hours of a technician's time in the data processing or research analysis to structure a report would be tailored to these individual regions. A lot of our information is more broadly presented than that, but and I guess another reason that I would cite is that I'm sort of personally sympathetic to the need, because for a couple of years I was an executive director of an ARDER here, which was in Juneau, which is the Southeast Conference, and I can tell you from experience that they fight for every dollar they get. And as I think Dave said, they're nonprofit organizations, and so they don't have an income. So we're sympathetic with that. But to get closer to Senator Wagner's question, for the record, I would like to cite that that we believe that this bill says public information, and all that follows that is public information. And I would cite for the record our confidentiality statute, which is, AS 1605-815. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'll just read a sentence
Roman,
out of that.
Do.
It says that the commission may release records and reports received by the department, which means Department of Fish and Game, which we're attached to, which do not identify individual fishermen, buyers, or processors, or the specific location where fish have been taken. That's confidential information, and so we wouldn't release any of that. And we have a requirement within the agency whenever we're doing research that we won't release any information unless it's aggregated to protect any individual information. So with that, I'll answer questions.
Is there a charge now for this kind of information being passed on? Or?
There is, Mr. Chairman, yes.
There is?
Yeah.
And what kind of fee structure do they have?
It's an hourly rate, and it goes like from $50 an hour, depending on the technician, to 35 to 20. It depends on the quality of the information that's necessary. But realistically, these kind of requests might run a few $100s to $1,000 or $1,500, somewhere in that range. So even if we got several requests, it would be some slight impact, but in the big picture of the revenue, it wouldn't be a major impact to us.
Okay. Mr. Senator Thomas.
I guess I still don't understand how you would get to a limited entry permit holder's harvest and earnings unless you went through Fish and Game, because the fish tickets goes to them, not you. Or do you get a year-end report?
We share that.
Okay,
we
so share you the share fish that yeah. After they get it, they pass that on to you.
That's correct.
Okay.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this doing anything different than I could get anyhow, or if I was an arter and wanted the information? Just public information, so is it just expedite my ability to get it and makes it cheaper for me to get it? Is that really what the purpose is here? Because it seems to me it's public information. I could probably get it. I might have to go circuitous route or something like that to get it as it is now.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tom, that's basically correct, is that this bill just says that we will provide it without charge.
And for what reason would somebody want that information?
The regional development organizations do a lot of economic development promotion and trying to stimulate economic development in their regions, and they use it to do the analysis of fisheries and in this case, but also whatever else they have going, timber mining. So they use it as part of a package to, I guess, portray their region that would encourage people to come there and stimulate economic development.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, if there are no further questions by the committee, we'll have Mr. Gray come on up with some final comments. Unless there's anyone else that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill. Not Mr. Gray.
Just one final comment, Mr. Chairman. We've had a fair amount of support from Arter's organizations come in, even though this bill has been recently introduced. It's received favorable consideration.
Okay. With that, we've got the will of the committee. I guess we'll close public testimony then. Got the will of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we refer the bill to the next committee of referral with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objection to that? With that, this bill passes out. Take a short at ease. Back in next, I want to make note that Senator Gary Stevens has joined us. Next bill we have out is Senate Bill 228, sponsored by Senator Dyson, having to do with the municipal land use regulations. Senator Dyson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing this bill. As your first action, I would appreciate it if you'd adopt as the bill before you my sponsor substitute. That's the backslash C version.
With that, we'll go ahead and move that we adopt Senate Bill 228 backslash C. Is there any objection? If not, the committee or the sponsor substitute is adopted. Go ahead, Senator Dyson.
Thank you. And with your permission, I'd like to have my able assistant, Jeremy Thompson, join me.
Sure. Mr. Thompson, come on up and go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
For the the record, my name is Jeremy Thompson. I'm staff to Senator Dyson.
Okay.
And he will help me both with the details and keep me from getting into rhetorical excess for which I am known. I think that most of the time in this, the jobs that we've taken on here, we're dealing with bills that have numbers and dollar signs on them. This one is not. In my view, it is a small bill in number of pages, but it is a significant bill in the protection of the rights of Alaskans. And as we've been in contact with people on across the nation who are interested in protecting property, real property, what we're doing here is of significance, and maybe we'll look back and say profound significance. Those of you that don't live in major urban areas probably do not recognize the personal property issues, the real property issues that come with major urban centers, urban planners, and zoning regulations. And what this bill does is guarantee that a property owner will be able to continue their use of the property even if the zoning and land use regulations in the area change. It allows them to do that for 10 years, and if you're a disabled veteran or a senior citizen or a disabled person, it lets you to continue to do that for your lifetime. In the area where I live, lots of very well-meaning people have put their regulations on top of long-standing pioneers in the area, and had a very negative effect both on their lifestyle, income, and ultimately their mental health. I have no problem with a new subdivision that has land use regulations, and everybody that moves in there knows what they are before they buy, and they can agree to that, and if they choose to, that's their business. What I strongly object to is development in an area that moves around in around one of our pioneers or somebody that's been there for a long time and imposes their collective will on that person. We have subdivisions in my jurisdiction where you can't change the color of your house without getting a committee's approval. You can't drive your pickup truck home if it has a logo on the door. You can't have your boat, trailer, snow machine there. You can't have a vehicle that you're working on in the yard, and I think that's and you can't have a sign, including a political sign, in your yard. I think that's a huge abrogation of the First Amendment rights, but if people agree to that when they go in, they're welcome. But seems to me to be contrary to Alaskans' nature. So I suspect if this bill gets any traction and moves, we'll hear from some urban planners and so on who will say that this restricts their rights. And it does restrict their right to impose a change of values for the use of the land on somebody unless, and it's carefully said here, unless they can demonstrate that it has a negative impact on the neighborhood. In my original version, it said, whatever the guy's doing, if it's legal, you can't hear it, smell it, or see it, it's none of the government's darn business. The drafters encouraged me to go back to common law definition, you know, what's a common nuisance. And I need those people to tone me down. When our country was founded, and you all know the slogan, the right to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. What's the first one?
Life, liberty,
and pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. Much of the debate was that third phrase, and the original version of it was protection of private property. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read you some quotations, and I think you have them on the green sheet. Mm-hmm. Our founding fathers, who I've often astonished at their wisdom, were scholars a bit and much more well-read than me and maybe some of you. But Montesquieu said, it is not for the advantage of the public to deprive an individual of his property or even to retrench the least part of it by law or political regulation. Blackstone, who the two of you are attorneys here at legal training will recognize, So great, moreover, is the regard of the law for private property that it will not be authorized in the least violation of it, no, not even for the general good of the community. Locke said, John Locke, the preservation of property is the reason for which men enter into society, and the government can never have a power to take to themselves the whole or any part of the subject property without their own consent, or he means the property owner's consent, for this would be, in effect, to leave them with no property at all. Samuel Adams said that our inalienable rights include, first, the right to life, second, to liberty, and thirdly, to property, together with the right to support and defend them. Maybe that's Second Amendment stuff. John Adams said, the moment the idea is admitted to society that property is not as sacred as the law of God, and that there is not a force of law and public justice to protect it, that's protect property, anarchy and tyranny will commence. Property is surely a right of mankind as well as liberty. And many of you who read history and geopolitical stuff know that many of the battles, in particularly in South America, are over the fact that common people don't have access to the land. And that's given great impetus to much of the Marxist movement to take the money away from the rich and landed families to give it to ordinary folks. John Jay said, he was first justice of our Supreme Court, it is the undoubtable right and unalienable privilege of a citizen not to be divested or interrupted in the innocent use of property. This is the cornerstone of every free constitution. Adam Smith, the Scottish founder of much of our economic theory, said, as soon as the land of any country has all become private property, the landlords, that is their government, like all other men, loves to reap where they never sowed and demand the rent, even for its natural produce. Noah Webster.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kukish.
Not to be disrespectful, but I think I can read this, and I have read it, and I don't know if you want to go through every one of them, unless you really want to.
I do, because I get excited about it, but I appreciate that.
And I was waiting for him to nudge you, but he didn't. I thought I would.
All right. There's more quotes here. Fisher Ames, one of the framers of the Bill of Rights, said that it is a chief duty and care of all governments to protect the rights of property. The last, and I'll let it go at there, the last one is Thomas Jefferson said, it is the unalienable and God-given right and duties to take none of the property from us, including the right to own, use, and enjoy one's own private property. So what we're doing here is trying to protect government from coming in and imposing a change of land use. Now, there's a section here you'll see in our bill that deals with home-based businesses, and you will hear the argument, perhaps, that we already allow for what's called grandfathering of a business. That's not sufficient in my view, because that only means that you can continue whatever level of activity was there.
Senator Dyson, if you excuse me, I got to take a brief at ease. I got a message. Vice Chair, Senator Kukish.
So we'll excuse you. Are you coming back?
I hope so.
Okay. With that, we'll come back into session and ask Senator Dyson to go ahead and with his presentation.
Yeah. So this one says that whatever, instead of just saying your use that you had was grandfathered, it says that whatever was permitted before the zoning or planning change, you can continue. So if, like in much of my district and maybe some of yours, you could put up a Quonset hut. If that was permitted before the zoning change came, you could do it. You could go ahead and do it afterwards and give you the period for a transition. That right to continue those previously permitted uses terminates with the transfer of the property or 10 years. And what have I not said I should have?
This is Jeremy Thompson again. Can I just make a few brief points? Sure. First of all, you cannot separate the use of private property and the possession of private property. When you take away the freedom to use private property in a certain way, you take away a piece of it in some form. The second point I'd make is that SB 228 makes it less confusing for the property owner. Pages and pages of regulations to memorize and know on what you can and cannot use on your land is confusing. And only by a clear and concisely defined protection of individual property can we protect this. And that's really what the bill is trying to accomplish. Any rule that is not painfully obvious in its wording is vulnerable to this charge. SB 228 maintains the power of local government to do good, while at the same time restrains it from committing unjust acts. While local control is a moral good, it should not be arbitrary, nor should it be maintained at the expense of private property rights. SB 228 recognizes, this is the third point, recognizes that we already have a well-defined common law tradition of what constitutes a public nuisance, and that if you want to restrict a private citizen's right to use his or her land, you need to appeal to that tradition. In that tradition, our rights are safe. If we cut down the laws of that tradition for that which is economically advantageous or politically expedient, we will have nowhere to hide when those forces are turned against us as citizens. And in closing, I would just say that this is a very important issue to me. And there are two books that are for those of you who are interested in this subject. The first one is Takings by Richard Epstein, and the other one is Cornerstone of Liberty, Property Rights in 21st Century America by Tim Sandifer. Very good introductions. So, and that's all I have to say.
Good, thank you. Do we have questions for the sponsor from the members of the committee? Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the principle you're talking about, but also we have communities that have said that they establish their own rules by of the vote, you know, by a vote of a city council. And I'm thinking, I mean, I'm just trying to think my way through this, Senator. You know, I know like in Kodiak, there are rules about animals. You know, if you can't have barnyard animals in the city. And I think that's probably good, you know, to not have chickens next door waking you up at 4 in the morning or whatever. Is this what you're talking about, or are you talking about something different? Are you saying because you had chickens at one time, you should always be able to have chickens even though you're living within the city limits?
In essence, yes. If the city changes what is permitted there, and you're a senior citizen, disabled vet, or, you know, you can continue whatever was permitted before the city changed its mind. And in my district, I've got lots of people out there that race dogs, you know, and so on. But the city still has the right if they can, it says here on page 2, line 6 and 7, the municipality determines that the patrols, whatever they're doing there, would have a negative effect on the neighbors or the neighborhood in the area where the property is located. So if they can make that case, then they can impose. But it's when the city changes it. Whoever was there before has a right to continue that until the property changes, or 10 years if they're a senior citizen or a veteran.
One follow-up, Senator Stevens?
No, I think, I mean, I see some problems there. I mean, public nuisance, and it really does sort of stand on its head all of the laws that communities have passed about what you can and can't do within city limits, doesn't it? Say firecrackers, or, you know, say if you've done that before, you should have the right to, even though the city says you can't fire off firecrackers within the city. This would say that if you had done that in the past, you could continue that, right?
No. The city changes its mind of what's permitted, then you don't have to the next morning cease doing it.
Well, I'm struggling to understand it, and I appreciate your comments.
The other thing, Senator Kukish, for the record, Jeremy Thompson again, Senator Kukish, Senator Stevens. I would also emphasize, don't underestimate the common law tradition. I mean, there's a well-defined tradition in common law that talks about what's a nuisance, what's a public nuisance. And in that, I think that we can rest assured that, you know, at least the concerns that you've raised are going to be taken care of. The tradition goes back hundreds of years, and these issues they're not new, but what I find disconcerting is that we seem to have pushed all that aside and said, oh, okay, we're just going to have local government decide what people can and can't do. And I don't know how that gives us rest. You know, why does that cause us to have, why do we have confidence in that rather than the common law tradition?
Could I follow up on that? You know, it just reminds me of a situation where I was on the borough assembly for a number of years, and we had a homeowner who had a real junkyard and collected things and never threw them away. Lots of old cars, lots of magazines, everything stacked up and attracting rats, and the neighbors were saying, wait, this has got to stop. It took us as a borough a number of years and an enormous amount of money to force him to clean that up. It seems to me that you might be even making it more difficult for the borough to do its job for the neighbors, for the people who live in the community, to stop an old man from causing a lot of problems. And I see what you say is old is 65, and I have a highly object to that as well.
Response, either of you, the sponsor?
Remember, it's only when the city comes and changes. The guy's had a wrecking yard there, been a pioneer, and his yard is full of old snow machines and old outboards. And the city moves in and decides that that's no longer. He will then have this transition time to deal with it. That right is protected. I have a case in my area where there was Kelly's OK Garage. He'd been there for 35, 40 years. They came in and built a subdivision around him and put him out of business finally. You know, and he collected 1954 Ford 100 pickups, and he had a half a dozen of them sitting around there, and neighbors didn't like it. But he was there before. They knew it when they came in, and they ran him off.
Senator Wagner?
Well, I guess I like parts of the bill. The main part I like, this happened in my hometown to a piece of property I formerly owned and still carried the paperwork on. The city came in and a commercial piece of property that was zoned one zoning. They decided in their great wisdom to rezone that property only for other specific uses. And the gentleman was running a print shop in that building that I had sold him, and he was zoned not out of business, but he, by zoning, he was not allowed to sell his print shop. He was only allowed to sell the property and the building. And it cost this gentleman several thousand dollars in value, not only value of the building, but the value of the business. And I think that's what you're trying to get to and say you can't do that. These people have certain property rights, and it's what it did is it cost this gentleman probably $20,000-$25,000. Just on what they called a simple zoning change, and it really wasn't simple at all. So I support the bill in that fashion because I was appalled that they could do that.
If I may respond,
Senator,
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your enthusiasm. Unfortunately, this bill does not protect against that happening. He would be legal there and could expand the business even as long as it didn't negatively impact his neighbors or up until the time he transfers. And it does not allow a formerly permitted use to continue beyond the land transfer, rightly or wrongly.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that case, on the top of page 2, lines 1 and 2 at the end, it says the property must be allowed to continue to be used for the home business until ownership of the property is transferred. What if the property remains in somebody's name and the business is sold to somebody else? Is that, assume that that's okay, it's a home business even though it's not that person's home? Or it could be their home, they could be living with them, I suppose, or something, but...
It does, it, as I understand it, it does not go, the right does not go with the business, the right goes with the property, but it's still on transfer, the right to the previous usage goes away.
Senator Wagner?
Under your sponsor statement, that isn't what I read in the second paragraph, though, Senator. It says the first part provides that if an ordinance is changed to prohibit a use of land that was previously permitted, and that was the case of the print shop, the use of the land that was permitted under the old ordinance must be allowed to continue unless it's determined that the use constitutes a common law nuisance.
But that still is predicated upon the same ownership. If the ownership changes...
So your sponsor statement doesn't go into... So
it doesn't...
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that could be clarified to say until, in the same second page, second sentence at the end, until ownership of the property or business is transferred.
That's correct, and that's in the third paragraph of the sponsor statement.
Okay.
Let me read that more carefully.
Any further questions by members of the committee? If not, is there anybody that wants to go ahead and testify?
We had understood that somebody from the municipality of Anchorage was going to call in.
Is anybody online? Nobody's online?
Interestingly enough, if I may, when Jeremy was talking to them, they were saying, Jeremy was making the point that he has made here, this simplifies. They said, oh, no, they didn't, and they sent us, in order to illustrate their point, 13 pages of municipal code that regulates this whole business, land use.
Okay, if there are no further questions by members of the committee, I tend to like the bill. Any problem with what's the will of the committee? Senator Wagner.
I'd make a motion to move the bill with individual recommendations, and I don't believe there's a fiscal note, is there? Yeah, there is an attached fiscal note.
Individual recommendations. Anybody, any objection?
Just to speak to it, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stevens.
I'd like to hear a response from maybe the Alaska Municipal League or from some communities before we rush ahead into approving something that I can see can cause some real problems. I mean, maybe they can be explained away, and maybe there's not a problem there, but I think it would be a little hasty of us to move this out without getting any response from municipalities at all.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Do we have any Senator Dyson?
Yeah, and I would only say that this has very little chance of getting through this session, and it goes now from state affairs. And I suspect as a result of even today's activity that we'll get some of that pushback. And I sure commit to you if any things that we see don't know come back, that I sure will not be pushing it through.
Senator Stevens?
And I have the good fortune of sitting on state affairs as well, so I'd be willing, if everyone really wants to move it out, to allow it to happen so that it goes to the next committee, if that's your desire.
I'm comfortable with moving on to the next committee as long as you are. Any objection to it moving on?
No, throw that dead cat on his doorstep.
There's no objection to this bill moving. It moves from committee. Thank you. We're adjourned. Thank you.